Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Real as Yates podcast. We are your hosts, Paige Yates
and Taylor Yates.
And in this podcast, we share with you everything we know about real estate, Greater Boston, and life. And in case you're wondering, yes, we are in fact related. We are a top producing mother-son real estate agent team where we lead, surprise, the Yates team. Hi, T.
How you doing, Mom?
How's it going?
Good, thanks.
Anything new and inviting in your life?
The big news in my life is that I'm running for my local select board.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so...
A thankless job.
Yeah. It's a service-oriented job, which means that this translates pretty well to that. But what that means is Belmont has like this three-person select board that acts as like the managers of the town. And so I've been chair of my planning board for a little while now, and now I'm raising my hand to run the whole shebang.
That's very, very admirable of you.
Thank you.
It's a big job.
Yeah, it is. And speaking of that job, you get to weigh in on a lot of important laws in the town. So the thing that we're talking about this week is the MBTA Communities Act rollout. So the MBTA Communities Act is a law that was passed in Massachusetts that is designed to encourage towns to add more multifamily housing, and it takes effect for a lot of towns in 2025. Where the towns are required to file their plans to comply with it by the end of 2024. I've been leading the charge on that.
So just for people who may not understand what it is, can you kind of summarize it in a nutshell? Because I was recently at a fundraiser and some people came to me and started asking my opinion on it and how it was going to affect the town. So it'd be great to know what the act actually says.
So basically what happens is there are 177 cities and towns in Massachusetts that get affected by this law. And the state essentially gave each one of them a homework assignment. They said you have to zone for a certain number of multifamily housing over a certain amount of acreage. And at least some of it, if you have a train station of some kind, like a commuter rail or subway station, a certain percentage of it has to be within, you know, like a half mile of that. So multifamily, as defined by the state, is at least three units per parcel. So, you know, think about triple-deckers in Cambridge or townhomes in some of these outlying 128 towns. And then the homework assignment is determined by how many homes you currently have and how good your train access is.
So I think people who have heard this are confused and actually frightened.
Yep.
By the fact that if they live near a train, that all of the houses around them might change from single-family zoning to multifamily zoning.
That's right.
So can you explain it a little bit more in detail?
Yeah, what happens is, so first of all, the state gave each town a lot of latitude to decide how they're going to do it. So it's kind of hard for me to say, like, as a rule, here's how it's going to apply to a town. You know, let's say you live near like Kendall Green in Weston, right? Let's say you have a single family home near Kendall Green within a half mile. So probably, yeah, multifamilies are going to start cropping up in your neighborhood. The town just has to zone for it. They have to just say that like, hey, on this lot, three plus family unit is allowed, but it does not have to be built. So it's not going to be like a whole bunch of multifamilies all at once. They'll be built over time.
Is it the number of multifamilies per town, is that based on the home population, the town population?
The number of homes.
If your town has, say, 3,700 homes,
mm-hmm.
What would be the percentage of multifamilies that you would need?
Yeah, so it's based more on your access to the train. So for example, Belmont, we have 10,882 homes, according to the 2020 census. Because we have two commuter rail stops in town, our multiplier is 15%. So we basically have to zone for 1,632 homes, right? Like 0.15 times 10,882. Let's say Weston, which I think you said 3,700 homes?
About.
Since you have a commuter rail stop, I'm guessing you also are at 15%. So what's 15% times 3,000?
It's a much bigger number for us because we have so many fewer homes.
Well, it's still 15%, right?
Which will be...
Like Belmont is 15% 40, as well. 450?
450.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe 450 to 550.
Yeah.
Yes, it's coming. And some towns are still trying to challenge like whether the state can do this. I'm kind of like, if the state can do 40B, they can do the MBTA Communities Act.
Isn't Milton, the town of Milton, actually currently in a lawsuit over this?
Yeah. Theirs is a little bit funky. I mean, they're taking, I think, two tacks. One is that the state cannot take any enforcement action other than denying a few state grants that are specified in the law, but also that they got categorized wrong, that because there was a Mattapan trolley that was, I guess, never built to Milton, they got classed as like a subway district, which has a higher percentage, but really they're arguing that like, no, we never, like that's not, that's
they're
not
really
we are.
A train stop versus
more of a train stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see how that goes. I think the classification one, I think makes sense to me, but saying that like, hey, we just shouldn't have to do it, I think is, or that the punishment should be really limited, I don't think that's going to hold water. It's hard for me to see, like, because if it does, the state will change the law so that they can come down harder on Milton.
Why was the law put into effect?
We have a really bad housing shortage in Massachusetts.
So based on housing shortage.
Right. We're the third most expensive housing market in America. So it's like New York, San Francisco, Boston. And that is not something that you want to be number three in, because it hurts the local economy, because people say like, wow, I like Boston, but I cannot afford to live here.
So for example, if there's a home that say backs up to the railroad tracks, okay, and basically it's a half acre, three quarter acre lot.
Yeah.
So the value of that home just as a freestanding single family might be, in some towns, $1 million because the land has value.
Right.
So are you seeing that as a developer comes in and he says, okay, I can buy this, build a three family here, and maybe sell, generate enough income?
Yeah.
Like, who's going to benefit from this? Because
it depends on who you ask, right? So obviously, the people that will benefit from it, there's probably three. So one is homeowners that get their property included in this, their property value is going to go up, right? Because what can be built on their property just got a lot bigger, right? A lot more, if not, maybe bigger is the wrong word, but a lot more valuable. Number two is developers, because suddenly there's a lot more opportunity for them to find things that they can develop, right? And then third should be, in theory, home buyers, because the idea behind this law is that it attenuates some of the home price growth in this area. There's counter arguments for all of those, but that's the gist of it.
It's hard for me to understand that in some towns that would be fiscally prudent, because if land prices are the problem that we have in Massachusetts and around any big major city is lack of land. Land is what drives prices,
right?
Not what's built on it,
right? Yeah.
And so it's perplexing to me that a parcel of land, which is already more expensive than it should be, but it's lack of inventory.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to believe that someone could make this profitable.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see, right? I have some skepticism about how effective this is going to be, but the state's going to keep on handing down laws like this until the housing crisis starts to get better. And it's for better or for worse, right? I've kind of landed, I live in a town that is already super dense. Like Belmont is denser, has more homes per square mile than 90% of MBTA communities. So for me, I'm kind of like, there might be some more multifamilies coming to my town, and that's fine because we already have a bunch. Some towns it's going to be jarring, like Weston, it's going to be jarring. You know, I would argue sometimes it should be jarring. There's some, you know, part of the reason we got into this housing crisis is a lot of towns really aggressively downzoned, right? They said, we want, you know, take like Sherburn, they measure their minimum lot sizes in acres, right?
Right.
And so that keeps, and then they, you know, they'll restrict developments to single family homes. And you're kind of like, all right, that's fine if there's plenty of houses to go around, but there's not. And so—
Well, Sherwood's a good example of there's no commuter rail either.
Yeah.
So in some respects, they kind of have a double whammy where they're protected, high acreage and no commuter.
They're adjacent. So they do count towns that are adjacent to a commuter rail. It's a really big, hairy law. I'm not sure how it's going to go down. I think the state wants to do more, but it kind of depends on how hard every town pushes back and who's got more leverage. As with everything in real estate, it comes down to leverage.
Yeah. And who's going to spend the money to go against the big gorilla?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Cool. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back and go to the mailbag. Did you know that Paige and I aren't just your favorite real estate podcast hosts? We're also pretty darn good at our day jobs, too. With over 30 years experience and $1 billion sold in Greater Boston, we're real estate agents you can trust. If you're buying or selling a home, reach out to us at contact@yatesboston.com today.
I just wanted you to know that in our mailbag this week, we got a really good question. It is, how do you build and maintain relationship with clients over the long term?
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in your ideas. I mean, I think it's those touch points that you create, and the more personal the touch point, the more effective it is. So, you know, for me, for example, at baseline, everybody hears from me just about every holiday, right? I just sent a note to everybody that I've ever done business with and ask them, like, how you're doing. I know you do your Christmas cookies around this time of year. So you like paint all of your cookies and then you put together goodie bags and bring them to your past clients.
It's interesting. First of all, I think you have to be in business a long time to have clients over the long term, because in real estate, you're not seeing your client every year. It's not like an insurance person who calls you once a year and says, hey, your insurance is coming up for premium, you know, new premium.
Right. People on average buy homes every 5 to 7 years.
Correct. So it means that you have to be in it for the long haul and you have to maintain those relationships.
Yeah.
You know, I've been super blessed with having been in the business 35 years that I have long-standing relationships, and most of my business comes from personal referrals.
Yeah.
The line that all my clients say to me, which I think is the most important thing to be a good realtor, is they say, I completely trust you.
Yeah.
And that says it all.
That says it all. Well, thanks for the awesome question. If you're a curious cat and would like your question to be considered, you can just send us an email at contact@yatesboston.com or slide into our DMs at Yates Team Boston.
That's it for this week. Be sure to tune in next week wherever you find your podcasts. If you like this, be sure to like, subscribe, and give us that 5-star review. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok at Yates Team Boston or on the web at yatesboston.com.